It's been over 3 years since the attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center. But has the relentless coverage of the war on terrorism deepened the public's understanding of the post-9/11 world? It's what Steve Paulson wanted to get at when he talked with media critic Susan Douglas.
What's your sense of how the news has changed since 9/11?
Well, in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, obviously everybody was riveted by television and tuning into TV. And there was, in that immediate period, clearly, you know, wall-to-wall coverage about what had happened, what the possible reasons for, and there were even tentative explorations into other explanations besides the fatuous one that we began to get, which was they hate our freedoms. Christiane Amanpour did a very good report on CNN looking at what has come to be called the Arab streets, trying to convey to Americans how Al Jazeera reports the news, which is, you know, a diametrically different, opposed interpretation of events than we get. Bill Moyers did a terrific show looking at Egyptian youth and their attitudes towards the United States. And even on the networks, you know, there were explorations about Afghanistan, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, et cetera. So in the immediate aftermath, there was indeed a lot of international coverage. And we kept hearing this phrase, wake-up call, you know, that 9/11 was a wake-up call. Well, you know, 9/11 was not a wake-up call because after this initial flurry of international coverage, we're back to normal. And normal is a serious, precipitous decline in newspapers, in news magazines, on television, of international news, and a replacement of international news with what's called news you can use, which is mostly news about health, although it can also be about, you know, finances and retirement, but it's mostly health reporting.
So you're saying that if you were to do an analysis of, let's say, the New York Times or the Washington Post and looked at how much international coverage is in there now compared to 20 or 30 years ago, there would be a lot less now, and the same with what we see on television, on the networks?
I'm saying more than that. I'm saying that Harvard, journalism professors, private companies that monitor news coverage, including a website called Tyndall's, they have already done these studies. And they have documented the decline from the 1970s through the late 90s and even through the first part of the 21st century.
So this has been a steady decline.
It's been a steady decline
for several decades.
Yes. And what one might say is, oh, well, the 70s. Wait. You know, Vietnam, the United States was centrally interested in Vietnam. And, of course, at the end of that decade, there was the Iranian hostage crisis, which was one of the biggest stories, most covered stories ever. I mean, it was up there with the civil rights movement. So one might say, well, the 70s were anomalous because of America's particular interaction with certain countries. However, if you take even the mid-1980s as a starting point, ignore the 70s, you still see a decline. One of the things that has happened, and journalists like Garrick Utley, for example, former NBC and CNN correspondent, has written about this. International news is expensive.
You've got to have your correspondents out there in the field. You have to have bureaus all over the world.
You have to have correspondents and their 600 pounds of equipment and a field producer and a sound guy and all the rest. And so Garrick Utley estimated, this was in 1997, that it cost about $3,000 a day to have an international correspondent out in the field and sometimes $12,000 worth of excess baggage expenses. So we need to put this together with something else that happened in the news media in the 1980s to help explain this decline. In the olden days, you know, starting in the 30s when broadcast news was invented up until the mid-1980s, the news divisions were kind of carried by the entertainment divisions of the networks. They weren't pressured to make their own profits. They weren't spun out on their own. That changed in the 1980s. The news divisions were spun out on their own. They had to make their own profits. They were no longer covered by the entertainment divisions. And ratings, which had always been somewhat competitive, became much, much more important. And of course, this is exactly the same time that CNN is taking off. So there was competition from cable. There were pressures internally to maximize profits and reduce costs. And one of the things that was seen to be quite expendable was international news.
Okay, so international news is disappearing, is what you're saying, in all the media, television, newspapers. What's replacing it?
What's replacing international news is personal news, news about health in particular. Health has become a big beat on television as well as in newspapers and magazines. There are, as we know, major pharmaceutical companies that are quite interested in sponsoring the nightly news, selling us their antidepressants and their arthritis medicine and cholesterol medicine and all the rest. And the producers of television news know that their audience skews old, as they say. So they are catering to that aging baby boom audience by providing more health news. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a lot of information about health that people in this country need. But it is coming at the expense of us looking outward to the world. And some of this health news, I have to say, is awfully silly.
So you're saying that people don't want to deal with the hard stuff, especially the news that makes us feel bad, makes Americans look bad, and so we keep going inward. We essentially become narcissistic, and I suppose I don't want to make too much of this, but one measure of narcissism is we become obsessed with our bodies.
We are seeing increased narcissism, particularly in entertainment programming. And I think it is important for us, when we look at the media, to place different kinds of media fare and different kinds of media texts in conversation with each other. One of the things that we've seen after 9/11 has been an absolute explosion in reality television. You know, Survivor was, of course, the first big hit. Then we got The Bachelor, The Bachelorette. I mean, now, you know, wherever you look, there are reality TV shows about extreme makeovers. If we can't manage anything else, we can redecorate our houses or have our neighbors redecorate our houses. So you have all these trading spaces at all spinoffs. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, a show that many of us love, but nonetheless, it's part of this trend. Reality TV shows for young people, Sorority Life, The Real World, etc.
Well, it's interesting because I've never heard the connection between that and 9/11. And you're saying that really our craving for a lot of these shows is a retreat from the real world, essentially.
Yes, and you raise a very important point. I'm not saying that there's some kind of media conspiracy that is driving some push within. And you're very right that after 9/11, we had, I think, as a culture, such a sense of no control, loss of control. You know, what could we have done? What could we do? These forces seem so large and uncontrollable. It's perfectly reasonable that as individuals and as a culture, we'd want to crawl under the collective quilt, you know, in the country and hide our eyes and focus on things that we think we can control, whether it's a new window treatment or our noses or the behavior of our best friend that we can talk about, you know, on Real World, for example. So this is a natural tendency, but the media have absolutely driven this so that reality television has, in fact, exploded dramatically after 9/11, and it's a kind of reality TV that is incredibly solipsistic and narcissistic. Incredible self-absorption about relationships and bodies and sex and who's going to sleep with who and who's going to get fired. And some of this comes from the copycat syndrome that has dominated the media forever. You know, one show becomes a hit. Oh, pretty soon, you know, there were 15 of them. But there was a time, and I know I'm going to sound terribly idealistic and even naive, but there was a time when journalists felt they had an obligation to actually provide maps of the world for people.
But that there still are a lot of journalists.
There are the journalists like that, and they are as frustrated as people like me, you know? There are many journalists inside that profession who are deeply frustrated about what they cannot do.
Do you see any particular pockets of hope in this grim picture that you've been drawing for us?
I have to say, one of the most extraordinary things I saw right before the United States invasion of Iraq was on MTV, of all places. They went inside the home of a couple of teenagers and talked about what music they listened to and what their worries were about an invasion and all the rest. And granted, these kids, they lived in a nice house. They were clearly, you know, from the Iraqi elite, given what we know about, you know, people's incomes there. But it humanized them, you know? They had lives. These were not people you wanted to kill. I was so struck that MTV did that, but, you know, the networks hadn't. So yes, I think it is desperately important that we as Americans, given the state of the world, given the explosive rise in anti-Americanism, we have to do a better job of understanding what other people's fears, hopes, motivations are. And I think the news media is really, really letting us down on this.
Susan Douglas chairs the Communications Studies Department at the University of Michigan. Steve Paulson spoke with her.